The following presentation is brought to you from the supporters of the Church of the Sovereign God.
Seek peace and pursue it. That is, when you really consider it, a three-point process. Number one, it is to live in innocence toward your neighbor. Number two, it is to live with harmlessness toward your neighbor, and meaning your neighbor is anyone that you would come in contact with. And number three, it is to live in harmony with him. The command is not only to seek peace, but if, for whatever reason, that it might seem to be slipping away or escaping us or moving away from us, we are to press in a very eager way after it. In other words, don't just let it pass, don't let it just get away, but press forward in obtaining it and seeking peace and pursuing it and pressing eagerly after it, not giving up the pursuit, no matter what may come against us. And are there things going to come against us? Absolutely there is. There's a real Satan, the devil, out there, and he does not want us to be seeking peace and pursuing it at all, and he will do whatever he can to do to persuade us not to go after peace and to not be pursuing after it. I want us to begin this teaching today by looking quickly at the word seek. In both the Old Testament Hebrew and the New Testament Greek, both of those words mean the same thing. And that is to seek, to search for, to desire, to require, or to demand. And so you see it has a wide range in it, but the gist of it is pretty clear and straightforward. The word seek, when we're looking at this phrase, seek peace and pursue it, but just the word itself, Old and New Testament, pretty well means the same thing, and that is to eagerly go after it, to have a determination to go after it, to search for it, to chase it down. Now I'd like for us to focus on the word peace. And you can probably already figure out there's a pattern here, and you would be right. We are going to look at the three primary words in that phrase. The Old Testament Hebrew word for peace, of course, is shalom. I'd also want you all to understand that even in the New Testament, on almost every single occasion in the New Testament where the word peace occurs, it is based upon and it is derived from the sense and the concept of the Hebrew word shalom. And so however you look at the word peace in either one, even though they're different words from old and new, you come up with the same sense of and the same concept. In the Bible, and I'm meaning old and new here, in the Bible, the word shalom, and I say in the Bible both old and new, and I'm meaning in the new, of course, from the sense of it, because that's where the word is, where the word primarily is going to be coming from. So in the Bible, the word shalom is most commonly used in reference to a state of affairs. I go, I thought the word meant peace. Well, that's the very narrow view of the word, because I'm telling you, it does not mean necessarily the same thing that comes to our mind when we use the word in our English language of peace. But it is used to refer to this state of affairs. And what I mean by that is one of well-being, or tranquility, or prosperity, or security. And it is when you study this word, it's a, I'm going to tell you, it's a very big, it's a very huge word and concept, and so I'm looking at it and trying to narrow it down to a very succinct sense and feeling and concept here. It is seen as having circumstances that are unblemished. In other words, no evil, there's nothing bad about it in the sense and the intent of this particular word. There is no sense of defect in the use of this word. So you already got to start realizing this is a much bigger word than what we think of when we say the word peace. And so if someone says to you, shalom, and they actually know what they're talking about, they're not meaning peace in the same sense that, well, I hope things are going well with you, which is what we would tend to think, you know, first and foremost in our English word. If somebody said peace to you, it's much, much broader. It's much bigger than that. Shalom, rightly understood, is a blessing. It implies a state of prosperity, a blessed harmony, and it can be both a physical and or spiritual level. Again, it's a broad concept. It's a broad concept. And of course, the word shalom also represents the opposite of war. I mean, that's what we tend to think of with, well, there's, you know, peace to you. Hope there's no strife, no war in your life, that kind of thing. We may think it like that, but probably not most of the time. And it does have that about it, and it certainly means the opposite of it. In the sense of, and I'm not going to go there and read this because I'm pretty much quoting it, but in Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 8, it says, there is a time for war and a time for peace. It's showing that there are opposites. So it is the opposite of war or conflict. And the reason is because the absence of war would suggest an orderly, prosperous, and troubleless state of affairs. So the big, broad concept of it, we typically think of the word, when we hear the word shalom, we're meaning peace. It's much larger than that. It is really a state of affairs. How well are things going with you? We want it to be blessed. We want it to be prosperous. We want it to be in tranquility. We want it to be, and so it's huge. But we don't read and write and speak Hebrew, so we don't really think about it in that sense. And so when someone says shalom, we may even respond back and say, yes, and peace to you. It's so much more than that. Of course it means peace, but what does that word mean? Well, that's what we're looking at. So we go back to this phrase, seek peace and pursue it. So you're searching for, you're out there, you're determined to reach something, that search. Search peace. Seek peace. You're searching and you're seeking for this big, huge concept of shalom, which is so much more than simply lack of war or lack of strife in your life. It's this whole state of affair. Huge concept. To put it another way, it is the intended purpose for saying to another person, shalom. If you say it, that's what you would want to be meaning if you use the word one with another. And I've had other people in the church, you know, mention to me, shalom. And I may know the person and know they don't really completely understand this concept. They know that the word means is translated as peace, and that's what they're meaning. But, and I have said back to people with knowing this concept, and I have said, and shalom to you, meaning this whole state of affairs. And they don't really understand it. But I would hope that you would at least understand it enough that I haven't covered it extensively at all, and I know that, and it's not the intent and the purpose. But I would hope that you would, if you're even interested, to go back and do even a further study on this word. It's much bigger than what I'm saying. It is much more than simply the absence of conflict or war or strife. It is included. But it's not limited to that. In several Bible passages, the word peace or shalom refers to a value, a state of affairs. The sense is that of equity and loyalty. Again, I'm just building on it. It's a huge word. Go with me to the book of Zechariah 8 and verse 16, and we will see this concept that I'm referring to, that it is a value, and it is used in the sense of equity and loyalty. So Zechariah 8 and verse 16, it says, "These are the things that you shall do. Speak you every man the truth to his neighbor. Execute the judgment of truth and peace in your gates." Equity and loyalty is what that is talking about, is what that is referring to. I want to go show you one other one. That's in Malachi 2 and verse 6. Malachi 2 and verse 6. "The law of truth was in his mouth, and iniquity was not found in his lips. He walked with me in peace and equity, and did turn away from iniquity," from lawlessness, from living the wrong way of life. Equity and peace, truth and equity, loyalty. Without a doubt, this word for peace, shalom, is a multifaceted word and concept. And again, I state, if you're interested in seeing more about it, I would go and do research. Now, I would also pause and state here, I don't typically advertise, as it were, sermons, but I did an entire sermon sometime back on this topic, on this subject of it, and simply on our website titled Shalom. And I went through the entire sermon dealing with this concept. Okay, let's move on, and now let's focus on the word pursue. So we're told that we are to pursue peace, to seek peace, and to pursue it. So this is something we're to be going after. This peace, this shalom, is something that we're to be going after. We're to not let it get away from us. That is what it is saying. The Hebrew word for pursue means to pursue, to be behind, follow after, run after, put to flight, chase, attend closely upon, to persecute. And then in a figurative way, and these are all different, these are not just what we would consider to say as definitions. These are usages that we actually find in the Bible, in the Old Testament, when it would be translated as the word pursue or other terms. But it would be this concept that we're looking at. But in a figurative sense, it means aim to secure and harass. You go, wow, that's, you know, where would we get these? Where would it mean to seek after, to persecute, or to harass, or harass, as it might be pronounced? The Greek word for pursue means pursue, persecute, I pursue, therefore I persecute. So you see, the concept of this word in both Old and New has pretty much the same meaning in mind. It's, you're not giving up. That's what it amounts to. Because what we need to realize is the sense of pursuit in both the Old and the New Testament is to aggressively chase like a hunter pursuing a catch or something that he is trying to apprehend, to kill. The word can be used either positively, eagerly pursue, or in a negative way, zealously persecute. And with that in mind, it would be to hunt down. So let's go back. Seek peace and pursue it. Or seek peace and hunt it down. In other words, you're not letting it get away. If you have the concept in the sense of like a hunter going after his next meal, you're not going to let it get away. I mean, and that's like the big sense of the word pursue. You're going to do everything you can not to let it get away from you. You're going to hunt it down. You're going to take every precaution you can to make sure that you obtain whatever it is that you're going after. And in this concept that we're looking at, seek peace, that's what you're going after. You're going after this concept of shalom. And you're not going to let it get away. To use this word in either sense, meaning whether it be in a positive way or in a negative way, pursue with all haste, that is chasing after and earnestly desiring to overtake it and to apprehend. Again, this word is a much larger word than what we probably first think about. I didn't ask anybody a lot of times before I gave a sermon using different words and things. I asked, what do you think the word such and such means? Or what is your concept, your understanding of the word such and such? And I could have asked you, pursue. Unless somebody's recently done a study on this, we would probably not have a lot of this concept that is there. But this is what the word actually means in the biblical sense. It is something that we are going to chase after and we're going to eagerly desiring to overtake it. In other words, we're going to apprehend it. It's not getting away from us. Go with me to Romans 14 and verse 19. Romans 14 verse 19. And I'm going to read this from the New American Standard Bible. Romans 14, 19. And it says, so then, let us pursue the things which make for peace. The concept that Paul would have had in mind when he used the word peace, he is using the concept of the word shalom, the state of affairs, well-being, all of those things that we talked about. And it says, go after all those things which make for peace and the building up of one another. So he's tied these two points together, which I think is really interesting. So here I'd like for us to ask ourselves a question. What do we, meaning what do you and what do I, what do we on a personal basis really pursue? And having asked the question, I also believe that it is something that we need to be very honest with ourselves in answering it. And I do mean for us to think about it actually and to answer the question. What do you pursue after? What do I pursue after? I mean, look at our behavior. Are they in harmony with what we state that we want, meaning our goals? I have this goal, and I'm going after this goal. Does our behavior represent that goal, that behavior? Does it really? Does it match up? Is it congruent? If you actually do this, you might be surprised to find that a lot of the time, what we state as a goal that we want, we're not really pursuing it. Our behavior is not congruent with, doesn't match up with. It's a good thing to state, but is it something that we really are doing? And examine yourselves and take a look and see if it really is what we're doing. So I go back and state, seek peace and pursue it. Or we want peace. But does our behavior show that we're really pursuing it in the concepts that I'm giving here? Is it? Does it? Here, where we're looking at, there's a Greek word that is used, and Paul uses the Greek word is dio. And when you first look at this Greek word, it might seem odd for him to use it here, or even wrong, especially when we see that this word can also mean to persecute and to prosecute. But in this context, in this verse here that we're looking at in Romans chapter 14 and verse 19, and it says, therefore let us pursue. When you think about what this word is meaning, and I just gave you part of what this Greek word is meaning here, we could look at it and say that it's, well, that's an odd word, or it's a wrong word. But either way that it is used, for good or for bad, because either one of them, persecute or prosecute, could be some good and some bad, this word is about passion. And it is a strong action word. In other words, you're going to apprehend it. That's probably one of the clearest things. You're a hunter looking after something, and you're not going to rest until you've got this next meal. If you think about it like that, we can see that. We're going to attain it. We're going to get it. In other words, it is hard working effort, and it has the goal of obtaining. Is what we're pursuing after, our goals that we state that we're pursuing after? Does everyone know that you have this goal and they know he's going to obtain it, she's going to obtain it? Is that what some people would know? Is that what you would know? Or is it just, well, my goal is, this is what I would like to have? Paul uses hardworking effort. I like that phrase. This hardworking effort, meaning dio, when he persecuted those who followed Jesus and his teachings and his way of life that he was transforming in the New Testament church into. He persecuted those people. He hunted them down. He apprehended them. He pursued them. And so when he's using this word, that's what he's talking about. Go after the way of life of God. And in the context, he uses peace, shalom, and that whole concept, just like he went after the Christians. That's what he means here. That's what his sense is. That's what he has in mind to use the word that is used here. And so it's not a wrong word. And when you really think about it, it's not an odd word. Is the correct word to be used with the concept that he's wanting to get across. Yet, after his encounter with Jesus Christ on the road to Damascus, when he was struck down, once he was called, all that effort was turned toward following Jesus and presenting this information of the correct way of life to any and every person that he came in contact with. He wanted everybody to know about it. You see, brethren, when you really stop and think about this and analyze the life of Paul in using this word and this concept, Paul has personal experience with both sides of pursue, of Dio. And the thing is, when we really think about it, so did each one of us. Maybe not to the degree that he did. Maybe we wasn't so gung-ho about going after and killing people because they were living this other way of life that we don't believe. But we still went after self-centered ambitions and self-centered goals, not God's, until we were called. Just like Paul, once he was called, he shifted his efforts from living a wrong way, pursuing something that was a wrong way of doing things. He changed and he pursued living a right way of life, and so are we, to do the same thing. And so I think the concept fits when we look about it in that way. In part one, as well as here in part two of Seek Peace and Pursue It, we are seeing some ways to help us to direct our intensity to be toward God's purposes rather than our own purposes. So when we use the phrase seek peace and pursue it, that's biblical. It's old and new. And it's a concept that we are to have in the forefront of our thinking, and we are to be doing it. We're to be seeking peace, and we're to pursue after it. We're to hunt it down, whatever it takes to get this peace and to have it as part of our lives, and then to be able to share it with other people. That's the big concept here. That's the big thinking here. So again, here in Romans 14 and verse 19, Paul is telling us two things to direct us in this godly direction. And of course, the first one is peace. Shalom. Think about it. The whole concept. Go after that. That's what you're hunting for. That's what you're looking for. And he does have the Hebrew concept and the Hebrew word of shalom in his thinking. That's how he would have thought. That's what he would have thought. That's what he did. You see, shalom is not only peace with God, it is also peaceful and harmonious existence with our neighbor and with really with all of creation. And that's what Paul is telling us here. That's what Paul is actually addressing here. It is well-being toward all others. Shalom. Well-being to everyone. And it is obviously implying this concept or state of affairs of well-being to the fullest extent. And that's what he's talking about. So the first one that he says, tells us about here is peace. And that's the gist of what he's talking about. And the second point that Paul is addressing here is the predetermined and deliberate caring for others. Because that's what he said. You go back and you read that verse again and see if that is not what he is talking about. So then let us pursue the things which make for peace and pursue the things that make for the building up of one another. Now I read in words, but that's what he's saying. Isn't that what he's saying? Do all the things that lead to peace, shalom, with everyone. And the second one is, and doing all that we can do to build up one another. And so that's the second concept that he has here. The sense is we are to pursue the encouragement, the support, and the edification on the behalf of other people. In other words, we must be producing the fruit of peace in our lives so that other people who come in contact with us can eat of that fruit of peace that is in our life. They see it because we're living peace in our lives and others are benefited by the fact that that's who and what we are. That's how we live our lives, and that benefits other people. And What we also need to understand is this is not an accident. And what I mean is it is a deliberate, intentional production of peace in our lives. We are seeking peace and pursuing it, and it is on the behalf of building one another up. Now, I don't think that's how we typically think about this word. Either one of these words, peace or pursue. So, I come to the place where I think we need to ask ourselves, are others receiving benefit from our deliberate efforts to nourish them with what God has blessed us with, meaning shalom, peace in our lives? Are others being nourished by the fact that God has blessed us with peace in our lives? And go, oh, wait a minute, we got to step back and say, well, first of all, has God blessed us with shalom, with peace in our lives? He certainly made it available to us. It's up to us. It's up to us. He is not withholding it. Hence, seek peace and pursue it. Hunt it down. Don't let it get away. It's there. It's Old and New Testament, and it's in more than one place in Old and in the Old Testament. But the concept is carried over in the New Testament as well. So it is something that all believers are to have. We're to be having peace in our lives. And if we don't think that it's really there, then we're to seek it down, and we're to hunt it down, and we are to obtain it, and we're to have it in our lives so that others are benefited by our lives because we have this fruit of peace in our lives. So that's the question. Are they? Are others nourished by the fruit in our life? I'd also want us to please understand that this hot pursuit, energy, effort, hot pursuit of peace is to be a major trait in the life of every believer. I'm covering this topic in part one and part two. It could be part three, part four. It could probably be several sermons. This is going to be the end of this series, a two-parter. But it is something that is to be there in the life of every believer. And obviously, it has to be what I just called a hot pursuit for godly peace and for the benefit of others. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's about us having it because we are the believers so that we can benefit others so that they might also in turn become believers because what they see in our lives. Oh, I didn't know that I had any responsibility toward anybody else. We have a responsibility toward everybody else. These two traits are to be prominent in our lives as we seek peace and pursue it. In part one, we made a reference to Psalm 34, and we didn't read it, but I want to go back and I want to read from Psalm 34, where David said, I'm just going to read the one verse. You can read all of the verses starting way up in about verse 7 or 8 or so and read the whole context all the way down through about verse 16. I'm going to read one verse, verse 14. Turn from evil and do good, seek peace and pursue it. Now, I'm not going to go into any great detail, or very little detail at all, about the context of Psalm 34. But Psalm 34 is in the context of where David is in exile from Judah, running for his life. And in the midst of his emotional and physical suffering and pain, because he is suffering both. What David is showing us here is that God was with him and watching over him. And his thought was, seek peace and pursue it. This whole concept of what we're talking about is right there. We read in part one over in 1 Peter, and we said, and that's where we built first part one was on that, and I said, and he's referenced this back to David being in exile in Psalm 34 and David's thing. So that's why I wanted to read this here. But what I want us to understand is just as God was with David and watching over him, as we seek peace and pursue it, God is also with us and watching over us. To seek peace and pursue it is to make every effort to do the things that will lead to or will bring about the production of peace, the fruit of peace in our lives. Peace, shalom, this concept that we're looking at, can be as refreshing as a breath of fresh air on a hot summer day. You know what I'm talking about. We live here in Florida. From time to time we have hot days, but then there's this cool kind of breeze comes across. Oh, it feels so good. That's the way shalom is. When shalom comes across us and is in our life, it's that same kind of thing. It's real. It can refresh us, and that's what is intended to do, and that's why God gives it to us and offers it to us, watches over us, protects us while we're seeking peace and pursuing after it. Because it's a good goal. It's a godly goal. So I think that we were all determined that we need to make every effort to attain unto peace, shalom. But I have another question to ask. And this question is, do you believe it is possible to seek peace and to pursue it, and yet at the same time not have peace with a brother or sister in the church of God? It's a sad answer. The answer is yes. Isn't that sad? Because see, if we're all seeking peace and pursuing after it for the benefit of others, I'd be doing it for the benefit of anyone that I would have conflict or they would have conflict with me. And if they have conflict with me, they'd be doing the same thing. So we wouldn't have this. But we do. But you can. You can be seeking peace and pursuing it and still have no peace with a brother or sister in the church of God. Not even talk about neighbors. There are many things that can cause peace to be diminished or distracted or to remove it away from us. And what I'd also want us to understand is the only way that peace is to stop, the only way that peace can come about is to stop the things that disrupt the peace. Whatever's caused the lack of peace, the only way to stop it is to stop whatever caused the lack of peace. Peace among brethren can be disrupted by things such as gossip, pride, jealousy, envy, selfishness, worldliness, and the list can go on and on. Those are just some of the, I would think, more pertinent ones that tend to do this, that causes the separation between brothers and sisters in Christ with having peace with one another. James, over in James chapter 3, gives us information on how these things are not to be present in the life of believers, or to put it another way, is not to be present within the church of God. James 3, verse 17. James 3, verse 17. But the wisdom that is from above, in other words, from God, is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. If those things are present in our lives, in the lives of all of the brothers and sisters in Christ, there are never going to be any conflicts within the church of God. So in other words, if there are conflicts within the church of God, are some of these things what responsible for it? Yes, some of these things are responsible for that. Verse 18. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. Another phrase would be to make peace would be those who are seeking peace and pursuing after it for the purpose of having it. All believers are to seek peace and pursue after it. Do all believers seek peace and pursue after it? No. Romans 12 and verse 18. Romans 12 and verse 18. If it is possible, as much as demands on you, live peaceably with all men. I think it's safe to say that it has been mandated on each one of us as believers that we all can and do need to pursue after peace without sacrificing truth and to be living right before God. In other words, we're to seek peace with other brothers and sisters, but it's not to be to do anything that is going to be a separation from what is truth, what is really truth. The phrase, if it is possible, implies that with some, it is impossible to be at peace. Peace with brethren is a two-way street. It has to be both people pursuing it, living it as a way of life. If one brother does not desire peace, then those two cannot be at peace. What a shame. Now, what you'd also understand that in this teaching, I am not going to go into Matthew 18:15 or Matthew 5:23-24. I'm not going into those verses because it talks about what we are to do about it. It's not part of this particular teaching, but it is there. There are solutions. I mean, there are things that we individually, if there's conflict, that we are to be doing. I'm not covering it in this particular teaching, but they are there. Here is a major lesson on seeking and pursuing peace. All believers ought to be willing to sacrifice their own personal rights, liberties, and personal preferences rather than stir up trouble within the church of God. In other words, we should not be demanding to have our own way about things that are really of little or no importance. I am not talking about truth. We do not sacrifice truth at all. I'm not dealing with that part at all. We do not do that. Now, with this in mind, go with me to Jude. I can say Jude 1 and verse 3, because it was only one chapter, so go to Jude, verse 3. Jude 3. Brethren, when I gave all diligence to write unto you of the common salvation. Now that's a big thing in itself, just explaining what that phrase means, but I'm not going to pause on it. It was needful for me to write unto you and exhort you that you should earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered unto the saints. Earnestly contend for the faith that was once delivered. That word faith could also, in the context, be referring to this whole way of life or the truth i.e. this way of life. Because that's what he's talking about, that it was delivered into, and we're to contend for that. We're to hang on to that no matter what happens. Because you see, we are to insist, or we are to contend for the faith or the truth, and that eagerly, because that's what it says. However, we must never contend to the point of requiring someone else to take on our own opinions, our own traditions, or our own customs. Because if that's what they are, that's just what they are. It has nothing to do with truth here. You know, we should never insist that a congregation do three songs at the beginning of the service and have an opening and a closing prayer. Now, do I think it's a good pattern to follow? Sure, I do. Yeah, otherwise, we wouldn't be doing it. But if somebody, some other congregation wants to not do that, should we be ridiculing? Of course not, because it's a tradition and a custom anyway. And if that is what we, or for that matter, anyone else is doing, then we are not pursuing peace. We are pursuing strife. And that's not what we want. In other words, pursue peace. 1 Peter 3 and verse 11. 1 Peter 3 and verse 11. Let him eschew evil, or let him hate evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. That's what we're to be doing. That's what we're to be doing. Brother, we have covered some information on the topic of seek peace and pursue it in part one and now here in part two. Because like I said, this could be a 3, 4, 5, 6, I don't know, multiple part sermon series. I'm doing it in two. I'm telling you, this is the last one, at least for now. So with having stated what we said in the first part and what we've stated here in this part, let me ask, just how important is this topic of seeking peace and pursuing it? Now, I've already told you that I believe it's very important, right? Because I said it could be at least 4, 5, 6 part series. How important is it? Hebrews 12 and verse 14. Let's go there. Hebrews 12 and verse 14. Hebrews 12, 14. Follow peace with all men. Now, a lot of times, you know what I've said, there's different phrases mean different things in different contexts. What does this one mean? Follow peace with all men. It means follow peace with all men. That's exactly what it means. And holiness, without which no man can see the Lord. It says, without it, no man, no one can see the Lord. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, I believe that it is very important to seek peace in pursuing after it. What about you? Were these two sermons a waste of time? Or is this something that is very important in our lives? Do you want to see the Lord? Yeah, of course you do. It's a ridiculous question. It's very plain. We have to be seeking after and obtaining peace and living peacefully toward all men. That is the goal. And our behavior has to be congruent with what the goal is. And so we ask ourselves, is it? If it's not, get it in line with it. Because that's what we are needing. It is very, very important. Now, I want to conclude by going to 2 Corinthians 13 and verse 11. 2 Corinthians 13:11. Finally, brethren, goodbye. Aim for perfection. Listen to my appeal. Be of one mind. Live in peace. And the God of love and peace will be with you. Amen. Amen. And now the Aaronic blessing. I hope after these two, point one and point two, the Aaronic blessing also can take on a different sense to you. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, speak unto Aaron and to his son, saying, on this wise you shall bless the children of Israel, saying unto them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. And they shall put my name upon the children of Israel, and I will bless them. God bless each one of you with absolute total shalom. God bless you all, brethren. God bless you all.
For more information or answers to your Bible questions, please contact the Church of the Sovereign God. Our website is www.cotsg.org. That's www.cotsg.org. Or you may write to us at Post Office Box 89111. That's Post Office Box 89111, Tampa, Florida 33689.